dear friend Nicodemus. I do love this guy. Comes to Jesus, and he's in a bit of a quandary, right? Because he's among the Sanhedrin, he's among the leadership. He sees these things that Jesus is doing, and it makes the leadership nervous, right? Because they're in charge of actually making sure that nobody gets too far out of line relative to the Roman Empire, which is occupying Israel, right? So they're in charge of making sure that things are not off kilter. Don't give Rome any excuse. That's the motto. So here's Nicodemus, and he's a part of that group has that motto, but he's really interested. And so he goes to Jesus, but he goes by night because he's nervous, and he doesn't want people to see this, and he doesn't want to necessarily give Jesus credibility, but he wants to know what Jesus is about. And he sees, and he said, and he's actually also pretty impressed. He says to him, "We know you have come from God, because no one can do the signs that you do without the presence of God." This is just a beautiful confession, right? And Jesus says, no one can see the kingdom of God unless they are born from above. And I think what he means there is, hey, you're not far from the kingdom of God. You got this. You got something from above. This is good because you recognize it, right? Nicodemus does not hear that, right? At least in this story, I mean, Nicodemus, he doesn't get, this is a compliment. Oh, he could have said, oh, thank you, Rabbi, right? That would have been the proper response to what Jesus said. Thank you, Rabbi. But no, he doesn't hear it that way. He hears, you must be born. He said from above, but the Greek word is intentionally an ambiguous word. Easy for me to say, ambiguous word. It means born from above, but it also means born again, right? So he's hearing born again. Jesus is thinking of from above. But Nicodemus is thinking, again. There's no real good way to get that in English. Maybe it's, you must be born over. Right? Maybe. That kind of gets over, but it also gets over again, like again. So maybe it's that. So, but anyway, that's Nicodemus here is born again. And he's wondering, how in the world does this happen? What are you talking about? What is this born again stuff? You mean I have to... somebody has to crawl into their mother's womb and be born like a second time? And, you know, Jesus kind of rolls his eyes at you. I think that might be in the Greek text. Jesus rolled his eyes. And then they get into this very confused conversation, and Nicodemus seems more and more like, I don't get this. And the fact of the matter is, I'm with Nicodemus on this one too, because as you all probably remember, the born again movement, right? It's in the 70s, right? And you had to be born again. And I got this in two different ways. My mom became a born again Christian, and I always wanted her to tell me, what are you talking about? You know? And she said, well, you have to be born again. And I'm like, what does that mean? And she, poor thing, she never really could articulate it. She kind of maybe had a sense of it. And then in my experience in the black church, there was a preacher who was every Monday we had our gathering of the pastors, and he always taught, and no matter what he talked about, at the end he'd always say, and you got to be born again, you got to be born again. And I was like, and I heard it for, I don't know, a long time, every Monday for a year, and I finally got the courage to ask him what he meant by it. I want this. I want to do that. You say I do. I believe you. I trust you. Tell me how to do it. It's as if I had to do it, right? And he would just like shake his head. It's like, no. You just got to be born again. You didn't really know what more to say, right? But I think because he meant was, this is something that God's doing, not what you're doing. And that was my confusion, right? It's like, I've got to do something to be born again. Well, who bears themselves, right? I mean, nobody. What's the word? Is it birth? Who births themselves? Thank you. Who births themselves? Nobody does. But that was my confusion, right? So, I got a great insight into the problem with Nicodemus and Jesus. I think what Nicodemus and Jesus have is a problem with time. And the way I think of this is because on one day this past week, I called Medicare office. I'm just now getting on Medicare, right? So I got a letter about 5 weeks ago saying that my card should be coming in 2 weeks. Well, it hadn't come yet. So I called the Medicare office. Simple thing. I got the virtual answering machine, and they said, you know, Medicare, briefly state your problem, they said. I said, I can do that. I said, I haven't received my Medicare card yet. And the computer says, let me see if I got that right. You have not received your Medicare card, is that right? I said, yes, that's right. And then it said, now, before we go any further, we're going to need your Medicare number, which is found on your Medicare card. And I said, Lord, have mercy. And the computer said, I'm sorry, I didn't understand that answer. Please give me your Medicare card. I think it's the 11-digit Medicare card. I don't have my Medicare card. I would be happy to hold while you go find your Medicare card. Literally, that's what he said. I'm like, I don't know what to say, right? I don't know what to say here. Finally, they said, let me transfer you to someone who can help you. And I say, oh, thanks be to God, right? So, and I walked away from that experience thinking I feel a little bit like Nicodemus here. What was the problem here? And I think I figured it out. The problem was that the computer was thinking, oh, he's lost his Medicare card, but he's got to have it documented somewhere. Or maybe he's got last year's Medicare card, right? But I don't have a last year's Medicare card because I'm only just getting on now, all right? So the problem is time, right? I haven't been on Medicare enough to have the things that this person, well, this computer thinks I should have. All right. Now, when I thought of that, I thought, oh, Nicodemus is the same way. The problem that we have with interpreting Nicodemus and Jesus' conversation is exactly what I had when people were telling me I had to be born again. It's like it felt like there was so much pressure, like it had to happen right now. Like, get born again. You know, it was so intense, and I was like, I want to do that, but I don't know how to do that. But what if the problem isn't again or from above? The problem is the whole business of being born. And I thought, now, being born takes time, right? From conception to being born, you know, most of the time you get about 9 months, all right? And that doesn't even begin to speak about the time before that. Like, you know, when I think about my kids being born, they got born in a moment. I remember that those moments very well. But, you know, but there was the 9 months, and then before that, there was Virginia and I got married, and before that, Virginia and I met each other, and we dated, and all of that, and then even before we got married, things happened that developed so that I would end up being at the same college that she was at so that we could meet. So my kids being born is really a long time coming, right? There's a long process of being born, right? And I think that's exactly what's going on with Jesus here and Nicodemus. It's like Nicodemus might have the same pressure that I'm feeling. It's like, okay, born again, born. I don't understand that. I can't climb into my mother's womb. Tell me what I got to do here. And Jesus says, it's like the wind. Just interpret it like the wind. You don't really generate the wind. You don't know where it comes from. You don't know where it's going. You know it when you see it. You know it when you feel it, right? Okay, so I started feeling like, and I'm looking back on my experience with this born again thing, is that after a while, I started feeling like I was confident saying, yeah, I could kind of understand that. I understand God's work in my life now. I see it more clearly. I feel it more. I feel the presence of Christ in my life more and more. And it's this gradual thing that happens. And Nicodemus is exactly the same way. Nicodemus is the poster child for the adult catechumenate, right? Where you people who don't know Jesus, and then they go through this process, and they come to know Jesus through this process, right? And so Nicodemus, we see him in chapter 3. He appears again later on in the gospel, right in the middle of the gospel there. He's in a conversation with the Sanhedrin, this group that's worried about Jesus, and he is saying, look, he hasn't done anything. He's doing amazing things. He hasn't done anything illegal. Let's watch and see what happens. We've got to give this guy the benefit of the doubt. All right. So from going to Jesus by night to actually speaking up for him in public. And then the third time we see Nicodemus at the end of the gospel, when Jesus has been crucified and Joseph of Arimathea goes and gets the body down and puts it into the tomb. You know who's with him? Nicodemus. And tradition says that Nicodemus became an incredible disciple and missionary for Jesus. So it's this thing about not being too worried or too pressured into feeling something that isn't really felt, but it's rather taking a look at where we are now, having faith in Jesus, and going back, looking and saying, wow, these are the things that happened that allowed me to develop my faith. These are the things that brought me to Jesus. Huh. That's a beautiful trip. That's a beautiful journey, right? And so there are times in our lives when we actually forget. You know, we don't go back and look and say, oh my goodness, this incredible journey. And God gives us wonderful opportunities to reflect on that. So, many of you probably already know this, but one of my great developments in my Christian faith and my outlook on Christian life was really established very early in my life by my Uncle Dave, who had Down syndrome, right? And interacting with him as a kid growing up. He was probably not a whole lot older than I was. He was probably 5, 6, 7 years older than I was. But to interact with him, it was always, and to watch my family interact with him, it was like this was a guy who was the center of things. My family put him at the center, which is like totally culturally not right. His mother, my grandmother, struggled with that a lot, and she would always keep him home, right? And not take him out because either she was afraid that he was going to get teased or abused or whatever, or maybe it was because of shame, because maybe it was her fault. But for whatever reason, she didn't take him out. But when our family got here, and my dad and my mom, we're always, okay, he's the 7th kid, let's go. And he was always with us, and always went out with us. And he was always like, what was important for Dave was important for us. That was just how it was. And I think that's kind of a fundamental Christian thing. The least among you must be the greatest, right? So, all right, so I've got that, and I told you that story so that I can tell you this story. So yesterday I'm in Wenatchee, and in a store, and this young man is walking past me, and he's just smiling at me like I know a long-lost friend. And I said, well, hi. And he goes, hi, my name is Bradley. And I said, hey, Bradley, I'm Paul. And, okay, good, And I was thinking, do I know you? And he said, guess what? And I said, what? He said, I just won 4th place in the Special Olympics. And I said, 4th place? Way to go. In what sport? And he goes, basketball. I love basketball. This is great. All right. very, very good. How did your team came in fourth place? And he said, yep, fourth place. And I said, way to go. And then I said, do you live around here? Because I figured it was like some kind of Wenatchee thing. And he said, no, I live somewhere on the other side. I can't remember where, Monroe or something. And I go, you mean this was a whole state? You came in fourth in the whole state? And he goes, yeah. And I said, oh, congratulations, man. That is awesome, right? So, all right. And I'm like, okay, very good. Lovely conversation. Then went to another place, and there's a mom with Special Olympics jersey on. And I look, and there's another kid, and he's got this gold medal around his chest, right? And this kid, he's got Down syndrome. He reminded me a lot of my uncle. And he's sitting there on the bench waiting for something. And I said, oh, are you in the Olympics too? And he said, yep. And I said, did you win a gold medal? And he goes, yep. And I said, for what? And he said something I didn't quite understand. Then his mom said, cheerleading. And I said, you won a gold medal for cheerleading? He said, yep. I said, congratulations. And his smile was this big, and my smile was this big. And it was just all like this thing about, okay, Paul, remember this journey, right? This being born, you have been born into this. And it has taken this long time for you to be born into this relationship of being born from above, this relationship with God, this relationship with Jesus and with Jesus' people. Okay? This is all of our journey. And isn't it delicious to every once in a while be able to say, like, wow, this happened, and look where I've come from, and look where I am, and look at all of the saints who have helped me in this. And I think being born, when we think about being born again or being born from above, I think maybe we should stop thinking about again or above and just think a little bit about how is it that I have arrived to this life and to this being born into faith and life and hope and joy. Being born, it is a blessing.